You're Smarter Than Us is a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Check out all of the coverage of Soccer in the Carolinas at soccer, the letter N, sweettea.com. You're listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, Asheville's premier soccer podcast. Guys, welcome back to another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. As has become quite the theme this season, guys, I am with Ben the Soccer Goose himself. How fares thee, sir?
It's going pretty well. It's the day before our Independence Day, so I can't complain too much at all. Lots of soccer going on in different realms of the soccerverse, whether it's international, local, or what have you. But lots of good things to watch in the soccer universe.
And you have a big derby match tomorrow, am I right?
Yeah, it's gonna be an interesting one. I'll be taking the trip up to Cary, North Carolina, and we haven't beaten them in like 4 years, and I think the only time we beat them was in the Open Cup. So I think we've technically never beaten them in regular season. Well, I know that for a fact. We haven't beaten them in regular season, and to put it mildly, we don't fare too well against them. So we'll see what happens. But it is the birth of our nation. We are the Independents. So he's referring to Charlotte Independence versus North Carolina FC, for those that may not know my other affiliation outside of NPSL. Yeah.
Well, I will certainly be keeping an eye on the scoreboard and hoping you guys can pull that out. It seems like you guys have kind of turned things around since you let McGinnis go. So
yeah, it's definitely been interesting this season, to put it simply. But I think we're here for a different type of blue. For now, I mean, we'll definitely talk about some other colors and greens and things like that. But yeah, Tim, so how have the ladies been faring this season up in the mountains of Asheville?
You know, it's been such an interesting season. A bunch of us Celso Blues were sitting around not too long ago, and we were talking amongst ourselves about, you know, at the beginning of the season when we were making our plans on how to distribute smoke and who to build TIFOs for and what games to try to make pregame plans for. It all kind of came back to the women in the long run, because we really thought we could leverage the Women's World Cup. We were pretty convinced, with as many returning starters as were coming back, that the Asheville City women were going to be super strong. That we had no idea what this season was going to hold in store for us. And it's actually been a pretty rough season, honestly. This past weekend, Molly Dwyer drilled a 81st minute, and it ended up being later than that because of some antics by the Beaufort County's coach, and late penalty that actually put us in the playoffs. But that was our first league win at home all season long. Last season, we went undefeated. This season, we just couldn't figure anything out. We had lost all three of our league games at home. 2-1, 2-1, and then the Eagles came in and beat us 2-0. So we fared better away from home. Some big wins, actually. 5-0, 6-0. We lost against the Eagles 3-1. That was a pretty comprehensive victory they put on us. But it's been a struggle. I think we had a really strong crew that came in on the front end of the season that was already here, whether it be UNCA starters or high school students. We even had a few, I guess, that had either just graduated or were graduating that were kind of around in the area. But some of our heavy hitters, Molly Dwyer, Megan McAllister, some of them were kind of late to come back. And I think when they came in, it disrupted things a little bit. And Abby Brown, who came in from Lenore Ryan, when she was put in, she had a hat trick and a brace almost back-to-back games. It was phenomenal. But then when Megan came in and then Molly came in, it was almost like we couldn't figure out who should be starting up front. They started playing strikers out on the wings. There was no connection from the back. We really, really, really missed Brooke Bingham, who played for Carolina, helped take them to the national championship game this past year. She tore her ACL right before the season started. And there's just no connectivity between the back to the midfield to the front, where that was kind of the strength last year. Bryson would play it into Brooke. Brooke would play it into the midfield. The midfield would pass it to the wings. The wings would send a cross in, 6-0, you know, time after time after time. And this season, just the CBs aren't connecting to the midfield. You know, when we were playing Charlotte down in Charlotte, I was almost predicting. I was telling, you know, I was watching that game with Chris and another Independence fan that I actually forget his name. But I could just see the way that our left and right backs and center backs were playing the ball. I could just predict this ball's going out. Ball would go out, you know, pass to the midfield, completely mistimed, cut out, jumped on, counterattack. The Eagles are no joke, though. We now, having just won this game against Oak City, are going to go down to Charlotte and play Charlotte on Saturday for the third time this season. So we lost 3-1 away, 2-0 at home. Oh, man. I'm the most naive optimist in the world, so I think we're going to win. But it's not going to be easy. They always say that it's hard to beat a team three times in a season, and I've never really been on the advantageous side of that. So I'm going to hope that cliche is true and see what can happen. Another thing that's been really interesting about the women, though, this season is the attendance for the women's game is actually down, which is something we really, truly were not expecting up here in Asheville. Last year, I think we averaged 1,500, I think, for women's game. This year, it's down. It's significantly down. There's been some weather that's affected some of that. A lot of midweek games, and that kind of had more to do with the availability of Memorial and what the tourists were doing down the hill. But with the Women's World Cup, with the success last season, it really has surprised me, and I hope that the ownership goes into the off season with a little bit more focus on what they can do to drive that last year. I think I've heard a few people at games talk about how they didn't see any marketing whatsoever coming into the season, and I haven't heard from anybody that was a deliberate decision, but if I had to guess, I think it was. I think when they were trying to parse out how they're going to spend their money here and there, one of the things they just took a risk on, I think, was not spending any money whatsoever on marketing and hoping that things would just perpetuate itself into this season. And it just hasn't. Even the men's attendance is down. I don't know that we've broken 2,000 all season long, and I'm pretty positive we broke 2,000 for Pride Night last year. It was just a friendly, but I think we broke 2,000 for the women. And then I know the men sold at least one game out last year, so that was 2,500, and we haven't even gotten close to that this season. So it's been a wonky season. Unexpected. I know also once the women started losing, we had a 4-game losing streak there in the middle of the season, with one of them being a friendly against the Red Wolves. It kind of turned off people. People really enjoyed watching those 6-0, 7-0, 5-1 wins that we were kind of trouncing people with last year. And it really brought people out. This year just hasn't, the on-pitch performances haven't been quite as pretty. And it's just affected things across the board.
Yeah. So do you think that as far as on the field goes for the Asheville ladies, do you think it's been Asheville City ladies, I should say, do you think it's kind of been just a matter of them figuring out how the pieces work, and they've kind of figured out in the second half of the season, or what's really been the turnaround for the club?
From what I understand, at the beginning of the season, our coach, Lisa Marie Woods, who played for us last year, and I think she's a coach up at Creighton. I don't know that she's the head coach, but she coaches with Creighton. She was here, and then she had to leave, and then she came back. And while she was gone, I think the players started to develop a system and started to develop a feel for things. But I think a few players were being played out of position. And then when she came back, she kind of overturned the apple cart. And I don't know that kind of at the beginning of the season, we didn't have all our players, but then we had all of our players, but a few of them were getting played out of position. And it was a different coach. And then Lisa came back and kind of reshuffled the deck, put people back where they belonged. But now it was the thick of the season. And I mean, they only played 8 games in the league season and then 2 playoff games. Well, it will end up being 2 playoff games. So there wasn't much room for error. And that first loss that we had against the Discoveries, they had never won a game in club history. And they came up and it's just one of those things where last year everything was finding the back of the net. everything. I mean, just crosses were coming in inch perfect. One-on-ones, everybody was always beating the keeper. And this season, at least at home, and like I said, until that very last game, we did not win a game at home league-wise. Just nothing was finding the back of the net. Things were skimming the crossbar. Things were going wide. Crosses were just missing. We're a very short team this year, too, especially up front. Not that we were much taller last year, but I feel like we scored some headers last year that we just are not scoring this year. It's a little bit of a, you can tell the gap in talent a little bit more this year, and I think it closed more than it was last year, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think that's impressive that potentially some of these other clubs gained a little bit more talent through the off season, especially the South Carolina teams. The Eagles, who we played in that Pride Night friendly last year, and we drew 2-2, and by far was the most entertaining game of the season, just in terms of things being fairly even on the pitch, and we scored, and then they scored, and we scored, and then they scored. They are just super talented. I don't know where they get their players. I don't know what college they're coming from. If that is a do the Eagles have youth teams down there?
Yeah, they do. I mean, they've been a club for an extended period of time. I don't know how long the women's side of the spectrum has worked for mm-hmm. them. But, I mean, they've been a club since, I want to say, the early days of the USL. So I know for a fact that they've been around for quite some time, and they have a pretty extensive youth roots, I guess you could say.
Yeah, so I don't know if they're filling their roster with players that have, you know, grown up with that club, or where they're getting their players, but they're finely tuned. I was excited when they came into our league. I assumed it was going to be a good rivalry, but I had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. But the women do live to fight again, and we go back down to Charlotte on Saturday, so I hope we can swing things back
around. Yeah, and that's after the but they now, just I think this just went final a bit ago. They just knocked off Oak City United 2-0 in that playoff game, so that's good first playoff victory for the ladies in Asheville.
It's a little bit of a revenge tour milestone, because Oak City was the team the women lost their only game against last year, 3-2, last game of the season, which kept them out of the playoffs last year.
Definitely a little bit.
We can go down to Charlotte.
Revenge sprinkled exactly. into that.
So, like I was saying, though, we at the beginning of the season, we were kind of sitting around and thinking, predicting how the season was going to go. And we assumed the women were going to run away with things, and that the men were going to be in a hard-fought battle to even potentially make the playoffs, with the Silverbacks rebranding but always having an amazing talent pool to pull from. Georgia, I was told by good authority that Georgia was going to be fantastic this year. Nashville's always a roll of the dice, but always tends to just be prickly, and you never know what you're going to get with them. We knew Greenville was going to come back strong, and we knew Chattanooga was going to have pro players playing amateur for them for a while. But since we last talked, Ben, it has just been an absolute rock fight in the NPSL Southeast. Your Greenville, the boys in green and gold, recently just picked up their last loss. Or their first loss to Nashville this past week on a short rest, 3-0 they lost in Nashville. That kind of came out of nowhere. But as we were talking before off mic, I think those two reds that occurred in the Carolina Classico had something to do with it.
Yeah, it's definitely unfortunate to see us get a loss in the second to last regular season match of the year. I guess there was some in the back of my mind. I was thinking we could have been invincibles. Obviously, it would have been tough to go through the playoffs with that record. But I mean, I guess in some respects, you learn more from losses than victories, and it has made it very interesting to lead up to the last match of the last couple matches, I should say, because Chattanooga and Nashville are playing as we speak. I think I've been trying to check Twitter to see if they've actually kicked off. I think
they're an hour behind us, so they should kick off 8:30 our time.
The central time zone. I always, or the Midwestern time zone. I always forget about those pesky things. But yeah, it's going to make it down to the wire. I mean, Chattanooga is going to be hosting the playoffs. Is that correct?
Yeah, so that's part of what makes this playoff seeding so interesting, because the playoffs are clinched. It's going to be Chattanooga, Asheville, Greenville, and Nashville. It doesn't really matter who's where per se, because no matter what, you're literally going to have to play the other teams. They are all in Chattanooga next week, Friday, and then Saturday, which is super disappointing. It makes it a little bit easier for fans to go, and it obviously is going to be financially more bearable for all clubs involved, well, all the three traveling clubs. But I mean, everything about that definitely lends itself to Chattanooga coming out dominant over the course of the weekend, because chances are they'll play, I think it's a 4:30 game and then a 7:30 game, semis. So whoever plays the first semi game, and obviously Chattanooga is going to play that 7:30 game, you know it's going to be blazing hot in Chattanooga on Finley's pitch. It's just going to take it out of them. And then there's going to be basically a 24-hour flip around. And then I'm assuming Chattanooga, the way it stacks up right now, if Chattanooga wins tonight, it will be Chattanooga 1, Nashville 4. That'd probably be the 7:30 game. And then Asheville and Greenville in the other semi at 4:30. The matchups this weekend, Asheville is playing Atlanta at home. Greenville's hosting Chattanooga. And Nashville is hosting Georgia. So just kind of guessing, I'm assuming Chattanooga's going to win, Asheville's going to win, and probably Nashville's going to win. So I guess there's still a possibility of Nashville or Asheville playing Chattanooga in that first game. But I'm pretty positive it's going to go 1-4-2-3 with Chatta, Nashville, and then Asheville and Greenville. But that 24-hour turnaround time is just brutal. Absolutely brutal. Yeah. And Chattanooga is really the only club out of those four that has the depth to really, really handle that and handle it really well. So it... It's going to be fascinating for sure.
Yeah. And then what is the first tiebreaker after points per game? Because that's kind of the first tiebreaker. Is that right?
Yeah, points per game. So that's also why things are super jumbled up right now, because if you look at the table right now, Asheville's actually sitting in fourth. But that's because Nashville has a game in hand. As soon as they kick off and that game goes on, now they're dividing their points by 9 instead of 8, they're going to drop. So they'll go back down to 4. Assuming they lose tonight, they'll settle in at 4, Greenville's at 2, and Asheville's at 3. And then at the end of the season, you'll just divide whatever points by 10 games, and you'll have your points per game. A lot of people gripe about the points per game. It's an imperfect system, absolutely sure. But whenever you start to get into the national playoffs, you've got to have something like that, because you look at like Detroit, who's going to finish the season playing 14 games. You know, if it was an issue of who's going to host what, and it was Greenville, who only played 10 games, your points are going to be completely off. But points per game, you can make that judgment by. But after points per game, I'm pretty sure it's wins. So whoever has the most wins. There is a weird scenario potentially where I want to say Nashville, Greenville, and Chattanooga can all end with 19 points. Nashville would have to win tonight, and then again on Saturday, and Greenville would have to beat Chattanooga at home. If that happens, mayhem occurs, and I have no idea what the settings will be other than Asheville being in fourth. So You're Smarter Than Us is brought to you in part by Tasty Beverage Company, a beer store and bar on Asheville's South Slope. In addition to featuring a world-class selection of local, regional, imported craft beer, Tasty also carries a selection of specialty beverages like natural wine, cider, and craft sodas. This year, Tasty will be showing Asheville City away games all season long, so go visit them at 162 Cox Avenue across from Swannanoa Cleaners, and make sure to let them know we sent you. Well, Ben, I know recently down in your neck of the woods, emphasize the word woods, there's been quite the development of another local community-based soccer team popping up. Can you tell us a little bit about Stumptown Athletic and your conversation with Casey Carr this past week?
Yeah, I wish I knew more information. There's not too much I know, other than, of course, the name has been confirmed. It's interesting because the first bit of information I did learn from, I think it was the quarterfinal I went to, the watch party for that, where they had a little bit of a setup there, Stumptown Athletic did. The first bit of information I did hear about the club is they aren't going to be playing in Matthews their first year, which is a little bit curious, to put it simply. I mean, they are, I guess you could say, sticking their flag in Matthews. Evidently, they're going to be playing in different areas throughout Charlotte, which I don't know. I mean, in some respects, you can say that that's a smart move in some ways, because you're going to be able to kind of reach a broader base than just say if you just played your games in Matthews to start off. But to be honest with you, I don't know how to put this other than just bluntly. We've seen that in Charlotte before, with the Independents, and quite honestly, it has not worked out for them, to put it simply. Really, it's kind of set them back as an organization. I mean, I think we've had four, maybe six different locations that we've played matches at, all time in our 4-year history as a club. I'll be honest with you. There's times where I'll see somebody and I'll be talking to them about the Independents, and they'll be like, "Are they still playing at Ramblewood? Are they still playing here? Are they still playing there?" And we're not playing in any of those locations. So it's curious to see the club. I mean, I imagine it's a schedule conflict, to put it simply, because from what I've heard, the Sportsplex, which is the main venue in Matthews that they do plan on playing on eventually, long term, you do have to schedule that out pretty far in advance. So I would imagine so that the time that they would have had to schedule those games, from what it sounds like with NISA, they probably didn't know who was going to be in the league. So for them to schedule matches would have been pretty difficult, months out in advance. But it's curious to see that. I'll admit, though, I mean, talking with Casey Carr, he seems like a very well-rounded, respectable, informative co-owner, I guess you could say. That's one thing to keep in mind, is I think he's a joint owner with a gentleman. Interestingly, he's from Atlanta, which makes me kind of confused in some respect, because there's going to be a NISA Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So the fact that there's a... I think he's the primary owner. Don't quote me on that, but I think he's the primary owner. He's going to be the gentleman from Atlanta. I'm going to try to get his name here. Not that it's drastically important. And, of course, their website's not working for me. Thank you, internet connection. But, it's just – it's curious. I mean, I would – I'd be lying if I told you I left meeting with them and talking with them and just was – filled with positive energy and excitement for the club. I guess you could say I was more optimistic to talk with Casey, to hear his vision, to be a community-driven club and a club that's going to kind of be rooted in Matthews, pun not intended, but branch out from there into the cities in the area. But I'll just be curious to see how those plans will come to fruition, to be honest with you, because I don't want to say we're saturated with soccer, but we have a number of clubs in the general area. I mean, this will make the third club in Charlotte in general, the Independents, the Eagles, and of course now Stumptown Athletic. So I'll be curious to see where they fit in that spectrum of soccer, what niche they will fit. But yeah, it was interesting talking with him, to put it simply. It excited me in some ways just to be able to put a face to the name of the club, but it's kind of just left me wanting more as far as solid information to really grab a hold of and get excited about.
Can you think of a single reason they've purposely chosen to roll things out this way? I have racked and racked and racked.
It's interesting you say that they've kind of been delaying the rollout process, because that was one of the questions I had for him, is that it just kind of feels like I asked him point blank, what do you think we're going to hear more information about the league? What bits of information can me as a potential supporter get excited about with the league? And it was kind of, unfortunately, more of the same of just, more things are coming, exciting things are on the way. I think that's just, it's kind of the frustrating thing for me personally, because it would have been nice to know solid bits of information. I mean, from his perspective, and I can agree with it in some sense, it may be a syndrome of the current day we live, where we want everything right now and we want to know everything and we want to know what's going on here and now, and not tomorrow. It's curious to me, just because I can understand Oakland and I think it's Miami FC and different clubs like that that seem very well established. Makes me more curious about the league, in the sense of maybe they do have their things together, but there's still just a lot of questions I have. There's a lot of logistical questions. There's a lot of just, do they really have it together? It's just, there's a lot more questions than I have answers at this point, it's kind of how I feel on the subject in some respect.
Yeah, it's super interesting to me how the lower leagues especially continue to kind of cannibalize themselves. So if you look at what NISA's attempting to do, I talked about this on the Memorial Report, how NISA applied for sanctioning at, from what I've been told, the exact same time as USL League One. And basically the Fed looked at their sanctioning packet and told them, fix this and come back. And so 4 or 5 months later, they came back, reapplied or continued, I guess. They didn't have to reapply because they weren't denied per se. They were just told, this won't pass, fix your application. Came back, were sanctioned in, I think, late January, early February. Now, their intent was always to play a European-style season. So it was going to be a fall season, a winter break, and then a spring season. And then I guess it may have been one of those, like, the NASL played seasons like that, and then they played each other, the champions. Am I correct in that?
I believe so. Yeah, that's correct, yeah. If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I'm not very familiar with NASL, but I believe that's what it
was. So it was something similar to that. And basically, I think what happened is they were up against it, and they were just going to try to do the best they could in the fall season, what is about to kick off supposedly, and then kind of regroup. And then multiple interviews talked about how even during the winter break, other teams could potentially pop in. So that all sounded good, which kind of took the emphasis off of the fall season, and basically means that they needed 8 or 10 for their sanctioning pack, and then those 8 or 10 teams could basically play a super loosey-goosey fall season that didn't really mean much. You didn't really have to announce a whole lot of things. You were just going to basically work out the kinks, spend a lot of money on travel, try to build up your fan base. And then theoretically, you could really lean into it into the spring season when you had more momentum and more teams. Now, what's super disappointing to me, because everybody knows where my loyalties kind of lie in this situation, is that right off the bat, they just had an AGM in Charlotte, and Miami FC was there, and Miami FC committed to joining them in the spring season of 2020. They haven't said whether or not they're still going to play the Founders Cup in the fall, but theoretically, I guess they could even play both, theoretically, because that's the NPSL Founders Cup schedule is already out. So that was the first defection. And in fact, I guess that's actually the second one, because Cal United Strikers out in LA had already left the Founders Cup a while ago, and they've long rumored been to be one of the LA teams for NISA. And then very recently, we heard that the Oakland Roots pulled out of the Founders Cup, full stop. They're not even going to play the fall season. They're just going to play a string of friendlies. And then in the spring, also go to NISA. So this tells me a couple things, which is, A, the Founders Cup just truly, truly has not gotten anything together. I know there was a big debate about insurance and insuring pro players and not having a large enough pool to bring premiums down. That I can't believe they didn't have that conversation before they announce things and really sort that out. But if NISA, as much of a mess as we think NISA has been, if NISA is the more attractive of the two and they're going to that just does not portend anything positive for the Founders Cup whatsoever. And I think the NISA rollout, I think the big juxtaposition that we see and how poorly they've done is that it's being compared to, because it is a D3 sanctioning, it's being compared to USL D3, which had a super organized, I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't think the branding in D3 USL has been anything particularly amazing whatsoever, but it rolled out very smoothly. They were able to sign players in a proper amount of time. Everybody knew from the first announcement when they were going to kick off. They curated things extremely well. They had that kind of media machine that USL is behind them, and it just worked extremely well. NISA apparently wanted to go the other direction. They didn't want the league to lead the announcements. They didn't want the league to lead the rollout of anything and let the independent clubs do it. I mean, you had like Atlanta making a couple statements back in the winter. I think Charlotte now, or Stumptown, is the first one out of the unannounced, not having existed before, never kicked a ball clubs, to release their branding, which I think it's a little underwhelming also. Did you see the Connecticut United or whatever it is
crest that supposedly Connecticut came United out? Wolf Clan. I feel like there's gonna be an FC or an SC or a Sporting at the end of that, just to make it unnecessarily long. Yeah, I don't know how I felt about, like, I hate to say it in some ways, because I don't know that I hate the crest. The middle wolf looks weird. I like the coloring. The name is just, it's just way too much going on. The name is just their branding. I don't mind the idea. It's just the application of choosing a name that a city that they're going to be in is historically known for. But I mean, as far as I know, the people I've asked in the general area of Charlotte knew that in general Stumptown was Matthews, quite frankly. And on top of that, you have the whole aspect of there's a whole nother city on a different part of the American globe or the American map that's called Stumptown. Mm-hmm. So it's curious that that's the crest. It's very underwhelming, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. I don't mind the idea of really everything. It's just the S and the T in the middle of the crest. When I saw it originally, the S and the T, I was like, that's not bad. I mean, it's not a bad, like, secondary logo. I mean, it's not terrible, but to see that be the crux of the marketing is a little bit strange to me. Again, not terrible. I mean, I couldn't do any better, to be honest with you. But it's curious that that's the first initial, because really I would say the crest is the first impression you're going to get as a club. Mm-hmm. Maybe the name is the first impression. The crest is a strong second, I guess you can say. But yeah, it's just, it's been really curious to see how things have gone just in general, because I mean, I'll give Casey Carter some credit, because he has said, and well, he did say when I talked to him that he does plan on doing events, I think every week or every couple weeks here in the area to really, invest time in the community, which is, I think it's admirable. It'll be curious to see if those types of events, I mean, I know just this past week, or when I first met them, they did a watch party at the U.S. Women's World Cup match. And they're going to do the same at the final. And they also had just another meeting in a brewery in Matthews, which is cool to see. I mean, it's always nice to see a club kind of embrace their community, but I'll be kind of curious how much steam that gets behind them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, the only other major takeaway I did have from talking with him is, I'll admit, maybe I missed this or I just didn't know this in general, but apparently he has been a part of NISA since the beginning. For those that may not know, could be wrong on this, but I'm pretty confident. He's basically a consultant for different types of sports clubs, in very heavily on the soccer side of things. He's been in Charlotte for, I think since about the early 2000s. So that gives him some type of a weight in the idea that he's been in this community and that type of thing. And it was interesting too, because he did mention that, I don't know the distinct capacity, but Peter Wilt is still, I guess, in some ways helping with the league, as far as bouncing ideas off and things like that. So that I did find interesting and in some ways encouraging in that respect, that it just wasn't a fluke thing for Casey Carr to be involved with this type of thing. He is in that area too, so it's cool to see, I guess you could say, a local head face of the organization. And it's nice to see that Peter Wilt is still in some capacity moving along NISA in the right direction, I guess you could say.
Well, they need all the help they can get. I'm pulling for him, though. I really am. I love, you know, Wilt came out with his like manifesto a couple years ago, and it checked all the boxes for me. That was one of, you know, my when I really started understanding what the landscape was of the lower leagues and why certain things were what they were and why certain things weren't the way that they were. Wilt really put that out there as, you know, saying that this is what NISA is going to be, and the clubs that kind of initially signed up for it, the Chattanoogas and the Detroits, and it just was all so attractive. And I know they're still maintaining some of that. They've really dropped that like pro rel rhetoric, but they maintain the low bar for entry. They just want the league fees, which are a little bit higher, but there's no expansion fee. I think that's why you're seeing a lot of these teams that potentially were going to be in the Founders Cup lean into that, as long as they meet those professional league standards. Well, Ben, we've got a scoot. I appreciate you hopping on with me. You know, in the off season, or at least the NPSL off season, I would love to have you back on. I know you've got some interesting ideas for some podcasts yourself, so maybe you could hop on and explain some of those and piggyback on some of my listeners. But I always appreciate you hopping on.
Yeah, always glad to talk some soccer with you. Appreciate it, Tim. Right.
Guys, we'll be back soon with another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. Been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast. Shoot us an email at youresmarterthanus@gmail.com or find us on Twitter @YOURE_smarter.